Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
It's better over here.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
As we've been doing for the last several Wednesdays and having a lot of fun with it, we welcome in Howie Rose. Howie's appearance is brought to you by Bigelow Tea. Howie, what a game yesterday. What an atmosphere. What'd you think of the Citi Field playoff atmosphere for Game 3?
Oh, it was great. It was electric. We knew it would be. We've had far too many of them since Citi Field opened in 2009, and I embraced every second of it.
It was just fantastic to be there and feel that energy, singing the My Girl song. Even a Jose chant broke out with Jose Iglesias coming up. You know, Howie, we talked to you about Pete Alonso even before that memorable home run with your memorable call and waiting to see him get unlocked here. Do you think it's safe to say now Pete Alonso is having his impact felt on this team and he's unlocked?
Oh, he's certainly having his impact felt. I don't know about unlocked per se, because, you know, when home run hitters start hitting them, they tend to hit them in bunches and carry a team. I don't know if I would necessarily say that Pete's carried them to this point because he's had a lot of help. So it's kind of semantic, but, you know, clearly this is what the Mets have been waiting all year for Pete to come up in these big spots and deliver the way he has.
Yeah, and the fact that he's hitting them to right field, just his approach is on point and his mechanics are really good now. But so yesterday was amazing, Howie, clearly. But take us back Sunday, all right? Because, you know, Uncle Mo, momentum is an interesting thing. You take off the headset, you get on the team bus, you're heading home. Did you feel like the Mets lost momentum?
Not really, because I think you have to take a step back and look at where they were. You're going home 1-1 in a best of five. So you've turned it into a best of three with two games at home. And I know I've been around professional athletes most of my life, and I know that they generally have an ability to flush these things. And I had no question, given what we've seen from this team to this point this year, that the Mets would do that. I wasn't worried about that so much. You know, the concerns are a little bit more specific about the workload of several guys in the bullpen, most notably, of course, Edwin Diaz. I thought it was huge yesterday that not only did they open the lead up to what they did late in the game, but that they were able to keep Edwin out of it and give him another day, because clearly he hasn't been anything replicating what he was 2 years ago yet. And I think every day of rest, even though he did get up once yesterday, even with that, I think every day that he doesn't get in is a help to the Mets.
Yeah, we said that. I think you're spot on. Howie Rose, of course, BT and Sal here on the Fan, voice of the Mets. All right, so one of the things that I said, now, I've obviously believed in the Mets for the last couple of weeks. I bought in. I know they're good. I'm starting to really, for myself personally, Howie, I think they could get to and win the World Series. And I cited a bunch of things here. The stars starting to show up. The role players stepping up. The starting pitchers giving depth, catching the ball, the manager, Of all the good components so far, what is the biggest surprise to you about this Mets team?
You know, after 4 months of being 27 games over 500, I don't know that there's anything so surprising. I will say this, that there is a unique chemistry among this group. And I accentuate the word this group because it's going to look much different from next year's group. I mean, that's the way it is now in professional sports anyway. But they know that this is their one crack at it together. And there's been, I think, from what I can see, and it's still pretty distant because I'm only around them and in the clubhouse when I'm allowed to be. But, you know, when things go south and guys have problems with each other, you hear these undercurrents, and there's been none of that this year. In fact, quite the opposite. Every player who's come in has been embraced. And I remember the day that Jesse Winker showed up, talking to him, and it was like a reception line. One by one, guys who knew him from Florida, from travel ball, from any other number of different places, came over, embraced him. It doesn't take long for a new player to assimilate into this group. So I think that the camaraderie, and I know that you can't quantify that. It's a little bit more, you know, esoteric than that, but whatever that is, it's there. And I think that helps beyond the X's and O's.
Yeah, and it's something that's been missing with this group for quite some time, even though the talent was there. And you could argue that they've had more talented teams in 2022 or even last year going into a season on paper. But yet this group has won significantly more than those guys. Is it because of a singular player? Like, is J.D. Martinez having this effect? Why the change? Why has it been so different and unique with that chemistry?
Well, he has. You know, when you talk about J.D., he certainly has been a huge help to Mark Vientos for reasons that we've talked about before. He's been there, done that. Francisco Lindor is, along with Brandon Nimmo, I think, the unquestioned, and I'll put them together, leaders vocally in the clubhouse, and a lot of other guys have their say and have played a role. But one other thing I think needs to be mentioned. This is the most orderly, synergistic relationship from ownership through the front office to the manager down to the coaches and to the players that I've seen in a long, long time, maybe in the entire time I've been around the Mets. You know, when I was growing up, you didn't hear about the general manager. It was a different game then, and you never heard of or even saw the owner. But, you know, the way the game's played now, the money the way it is, they're all involved. They're all part of the process. And to see the harmony between Steve and Alex Cohen and right down to David Stearns, who's just been magnificent. And maybe the best thing David has done is pick Carlos Mendoza to manage this team. And those guys not only are on the same page, but from everything I've been told, David gives Carlos enough rope to manage from his gut as much as the numbers. And we've seen that. We've seen times when he's gone to the mound waiting to hear a pitcher convince him to keep him in the game, which has happened on more than one occasion. And I know you can't, again, quantify it, but that relationship from ownership to front office to the manager to the coaches to the players might be unparalleled with anything I've seen before being around the Mets.
Orderly, synergistic relationship. What a wordsmith this guy is. I just put that together. That's a fantastic guy. I love that.
It truly is. And, you know, when you think about previous regimes, there were squabbles here, there, and sometimes everywhere.
Yeah,
right?
I got you. Yeah, true.
There's been none of this. It's just been it's been as smooth as you could possibly sail, however it ends up to this point in the baseball season.
Oh, and I don't want you to say this, Howie, and I feel even uncomfortable saying this with you on the air, but Buck was a problem in that regard. I mean, those are just things that I've heard, so I'm not trying to rip him. I loved Buck Showalter and the hiring of Buck Showalter, but those are all things that were going wrong, which is why they made the decision to move on from Buck. It wasn't just one bad year.
Yeah, but you got to understand, it wasn't Buck. It was a combination of Buck wanting to do things his way with a front office that wanted him to do things their way. They butted heads, and you know, there were times when it ruffled a lot of feathers. Now, how that translated to performance on the field, I'm not smart enough to answer because, remember, it was a much different looking team. You had a couple of future Hall of Fame but older pitchers that Steve Cohen took a shot at because he wanted to kind of shorten the period between beginning to build the organization in his eyes and, you know, that sort of interim period, and it just didn't work out. But what they did last year was kind of recalibrate. And once David Stearns came in, he wanted the ability and the autonomy to pick his own guy. He did, and that's where we are now.
So we're talking to Howie Rose, of course, BT and Sal on the Fan. So Sal and I would try to determine what the bridge to Diaz might be today. And every day is unique. Who knows how it goes? So let me give you a scenario. Two-run game, either way. Quintana good, not great in terms of depth. 4 2/3, maybe 5. Is it Peterson? I mean, what do you see Could happening be. In that scenario?
Depends where the lineup is. Like, if you're looking at the third time through that order, and you've got, say, from the top, Schwarber, Turner, Harper, 1 2 3, you might see Peterson there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you this, I would be surprised, not shocked, but surprised if we saw Peterson mid-inning. Could happen. Takes a little longer for him as a trained starter to warm up and be able to answer the bell more quickly than he's accustomed to. And I would also throw in parenthetically that people who think that Kodai Senga could be a weapon in a situation like that, the answer is no. I mean, I asked Carlos point blank yesterday, can you envision any scenario where Kodai Senga would come in mid-inning? And he said no. So, okay. You know, yep. But then again, nobody expected him to pitch the first game of this series either.
That's true.
So who knows? Nobody's going to say anything that can find its way into print and then have to answer for it later. But I think given all the parameters around what it takes to get Senga ready, I don't think he'd be a candidate in a situation like that. But, you know, again, I go back to the fact that Monday was an off day. Yesterday, they minimized what they needed in the bullpen. Maton, Stanek for an inning and a third, and that's it. So they've got a lot of rested arms out there. Garrett was up once. He'll be very much available. Obviously, Diaz now
has
got a couple of days. McGill, yeah, when the situation presents. And I think as you create this hypothetical scenario, which could very well be reality in a few hours, Carlos can afford to be very aggressive with that bullpen because of the rest they had yesterday, relatively speaking, and the fact that tomorrow is an off day.
Is Peterson a guy, Howie, that they could pitch today for however long and then have him bounce back on Friday if needed?
I would doubt that quick a turnaround. You're suggesting that he might pitch how long today? You're talking about for a batter or two or for an inning or two?
Well, right. Because I asked the question because I think they're going to use him more as piggybacking either Quintana today and more likely that than waiting for Game 5 or Senga in Game 5. I don't look at Peterson as a guy who's going to come in to get the top of the order out once and then do it again on Friday.
I don't either. I think he becomes more of a weapon to be a long guy or a starting pitcher, depending on how things break down. And you know, right now, if this goes to Friday, then Severino is on regular rest.
Yep.
But I heard Senga's name dropped a little bit, too, when I was poking around about Friday. So, you know, you may want to give Severino an extra day, or problem is, if you try to give him an extra day, you can be giving him an extra 5 months, you know?
That's true. Yeah,
seriously.
Sure.
Yep. I mean, you just, you know, you don't know. It's a calculated decision they'll make at the time that it becomes necessary. But the beauty of yesterday was that you've got a lot more balls in play in terms of the bullpen today and Friday than you might have otherwise.
You know, Howie, like so many people, I mean, I've consumed baseball on the radio forever. I used to fall asleep to it, right? Listen to you for years. And
I was watching.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Hey, I'm tired. Put Howie on. No. The exact opposite.
Yep.
And I had to go out. I had to run out of the house for a second on Saturday because I wanted to watch the Mets and the Yanks in the backyard with some firewood. I had to go get a couple beers, whatever. And I put you on, obviously. I heard the most incredible stat ever of all these years listening to baseball. Howie said that in the last 100 games, the Mets and the Phillies have each won 50 times. In the last 1,000 games that the Mets and the Phillies have played, each team has won 500 times. Now, you've uncovered a ton of stats. Is that the craziest number you've ever come across?
It really shocked me and made me open my eyes a bit and wondered whether or not it was accurate. But a fellow by the name of Eric Hornick, who is simply the best statistician in the sports business, with whom I worked on Islanders telecasts for 21 years and is a huge Mets fan and is every bit the authority on the Mets and their history and their statistical history as he is with the Islanders, he got back to me and said, confirmed.
Wow.
So, you know, I don't need to dig any deeper. If Eric says that's confirmed, I'm going with it.
That is nuts.
It is, isn't it?
That's
going into this series, and somebody's going to be up one or one game when it's over with.
Yep. Howie, when we had you on last week, you said you expected, this was coming off of Tuesday's game one win in Milwaukee, you said you expected the Mets to move on. Obviously, they lost that next game that night, and then the incredible dramatics of Pete Alonso getting them to this divisional round. What are your expectations right now with the Mets?
Nothing's changed. Now, obviously, they could be done by the end of business on Friday as well. But what would they have shown you or anybody else that would lead you to think otherwise, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of why I feel it myself. I expected this after game one. I thought this was going to go the way of, the 99 DS against Arizona or the 2000 DS against San Fran, where the home crowd, the momentum of this team, the team themselves, of course, they weren't going to let it go back to a game five to the other venue, in this case, Philadelphia. So that's my expectation, but I was just curious of yours.
Yeah, and if you don't win tonight, if they don't win tonight, then you've got a one-game season in a building where the Phillies produce the best home record in baseball. So, they'll have those people every bit the decibel level behind them as they did on Saturday and Sunday. But one thing the Mets have not been at any time since they started this run to where they are at the end of May is intimidated. I mean, if they don't win tonight, they go into Friday with every expectation that they'll win. And
yeah,
proven enough over these last four going on 5 months now that would surprise absolutely no one.
A lot of slow heartbeats on this team, man, which is optimal this time of the year. I almost don't want to push it this far, but I want to get ahead of it because next time we have you on, the Mets will either be moving on or done, and I think they'll move on as well. Jeff McNeil, what have you heard? I know you talked to the Skip about Kodai Senga. Anything about McNeil for the next round? What's happening?
Well, they want him to get reps. They want him to get some play in the Arizona Fall League if they can get that approved.
Yep.
And I don't know how that manifests in the next series. If it comes to that, the signals that I got when the postseason started was that for McNeil to be a player, even though they didn't say this point blank, it would more likely be if they got to the World Series than anything else. But I wouldn't rule anything out. I don't think it's beyond the realm of possibility that he could be active in the next series. Luis Angel Acuña has given them a nice little weapon, too, because of his speed, his defensive versatility, not that they needed him in the outfield, which is another spot where Jeff can factor in. But they've got a nice little rotation going now, and Marte starts, and hey, did he have a big hit yesterday?
Yeah, that's huge.
He had as a Met, right?
Huge.
So, Marte swung a nice bat so far during this postseason, and if he's in the outfield and you've got a lead late because of his mobility issues, well, it's pretty nice to be able to run Bader out to center and move Tyrone Taylor to right. What a play Taylor made on that fair-hand carom off the fence yesterday. So the way they've got things lined up right now, it'd be nice to take a one-time batting champion who's versatile and throw him onto the roster. If they advance beyond this series, I'm not sure it'll go that way. It might. I mean, I would say at best it's 50-50, but it's a nice little conundrum to have.
Yeah, I wouldn't mess around with it. I mean, he's not playing second. Iglesias is. You talk about the corner outfield, obviously Nimmo solidified in left here. I mean, pinch hitter, that's it. And I know he was hitting well before he got hurt, but, they've done a lot without Jeff McNeil, even if he comes. And I hope he comes back because options are good. I'm not moving mountains to stick him in. I'm not interrupting this at all.
Yeah, but the thing you have to realize is, too, is that when Winker is in the starting lineup, unless something unusual has happened, say an injury to any other left-handed batter in the lineup, but if Winker is in the starting lineup, then their bench is all right-handed. And I think they would like the flexibility of another left-handed bat there, and that's what could accelerate this process to me.
I got
the fact that when they do start discussing the roster, and we're way ahead of ourselves, of course, but if they get to that point, then that's where I think that McNeil might tip the scales in his favor, giving them another left-handed bat on the bench if they're facing a left-handed starter, because the way managers manipulate those bullpens, you're going left, right, and obviously they've got to face three batters apiece, but I think they would like the flexibility of the other left-handed bat on the bench if possible.
And maybe that's my favorite thing about this team, Howie, the depth. They have an answer for everything. In years past, it was like, oh, well, this guy's only on the roster because he can pinch run, or this guy's only on the roster because he's a defensive guy, or just a power threat off the bench. Now it's they pinch run with Bader, a guy who can give you a professional at bat and also play gold glove defense in the outfield, or they have speed guys that they could put in there that could do other things. Like, this team is so deep. McNeil would be another layer to that. But how about the depth of this 2024 New York Mets team?
I go back to David Stearns and take my hat off to him for that. I mean, this has been a very carefully assembled team with a lot of trial and error, as we saw early in the year. You know, nobody expected to see Jose Iglesias here after he failed to make the team. But, you know, they gave guys like Zach Short and Joey Wendell opportunities. It didn't work out. Iglesias had some things to work on down there. In fact, I was talking to his AAA manager, J.P. Arencibia, yesterday. And you know, where Iglesias had been in terms of his perception around the game and where he came to the point where the Mets elevated into the big league roster was significant. And there's a lot to it, not only from the standpoint of some of the stuff we talk about defensively, the pre-pitch and the assumption that at age 34, his range was shot. You know, they also had felt that at times he had not been a great teammate, that he was more unto himself. And then he gets to Syracuse after not playing in the major leagues last year, and he's taking kids out to dinner. He's showing them the ropes and helping get that. He was selfless in the minor leagues in a way that JP was scratching his head about, going, why are they saying what they said about this guy? He's been a model here.
Yeah.
And look at what he's done since coming to the big league club.
Hey, by the way, did Swoboda text you yet today?
Not today, not yet.
Yeah, he's been checking in a lot, right? I heard you saying that.
He's the best. He's so invested in this. And, you know, there's a lineage to this franchise that's refreshing because, you know, sadly, we've lost a lot of guys now from the 69 team. But, you know, the surviving members of that club and even those who have passed on, who lived for quite a while after 1969, they were delighted when the team won in 86. And the 86 group, they want, ask Ronnie and Keith how badly they'd like to see this Mets team win. Because, you know, they're the ones that are always looked at as sort of that last championship team. And it's always 86, 86, 86. Well, even for me, you know, as a guy who, you know, is on the air every day and reflects back on those years, I want, you know, I'm never mind, I'm being 70, but, you know, anybody who's realistically under the age of 40 has no recollection of the Mets having won in 1986. I want this youngest generation of Mets fans to have a championship team all their own.
Oh, that's a great way to...
And it's time, man. It's time. So, you know, whether it's Ron Swoboda or Keith Hernandez and Ron Darling or anybody else who's a link in that chain to today, they're all on the same page.
Great way to put it. I never thought of it like that. Last one, Howie, real quick. Unfortunately, I didn't make it there for the introductions yesterday. Who you were on field doing it yourself. Who had the loudest ovation?
That's a good question because they gave a real big ovation to Jeff McNeil. They gave a real big ovation to David Peterson for the turnaround that he's made. And then the guys you would expect. Lindor, obviously. Alonso. You know, we weren't introducing the sous chef and all of those others. So, you know, that's the one that I when I do that on opening day and they decide that they're going to introduce just about everybody in the
nutritionist, the organist,
lengthy, you know, and the line up the first base line is extending out to Roosevelt Avenue. When we introduce the sous chef, that's when I've got to hold myself back from laughing. Because that's who the crowd gives the biggest cheer for, you know?
Tremendous.
So we didn't do that yesterday, and I think there's a protocol that the league enforces that prohibited that. But who knows? Maybe next round if there is one.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be Alonso, which is why I asked. My sister, who was there early enough, said it was Lindor, so I figured, you know, so either Lindor or Alonso got the biggest ones. But I just thought Alonso off that magical, you know, moment there that maybe he would get the loudest ovation.
Yeah, just a decibel here, decibel there.
Yeah, thanks, Howie. We appreciate it.
My pleasure, guys.
Thanks, man. Well,
Howie's appearance was brought to you by Bigelow Tea. Grab a mug and tea proudly. Unfortunately, I couldn't get there in time for that, but I was looking forward to it.
I saw your video, though, when you were there.
Yeah,
you posted it up on Instagram.
Yeah,
having a little fun with that.
Busting Evan's chops because he couldn't go
Evan
there.
Evan was working. Sal was hanging.
The place was lit, though.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Like the energy. I told you. We talked about it. Singing the Lindor song there, the My Girl song, the Jose chant for Iglesias.
MVP chants.
Alonso. Yeah, Pete, Alonso. Usually I'm not into that, the roll call for the player's name. Like, I get that's the Yankees thing.
Yeah,
I just never liked it myself.
Yeah.
But in this particular case, it was pretty freaking cool to hear 45,000 Met fans chanting Pete Alonso, well-deserved.
Given his road, for sure. Right, right. You know, there's no doubt. It did fit. It was applicable there. I know we got a break, but Howie's point about the 86 team and how it gets stale almost about that all the time.
Those guys are tired of hearing about it.
I get it because, like, my point of reference, and it's such a smaller level, but, like, you know, St. John's, I don't want to talk about the Final Four from 85. Chris Mullin's 60 years old. I want to talk about something new.
Yeah.
And, like, yeah, whether it's the Mets or the Jets or St. John's or even the Islanders in terms of winning, it just gets old, those old points. We love them. They mean so much. They shaped our fandom, but give us something new.
Yeah, it's just weird for me to say that because it's all I've known. I mean, I was 7 years old in 1986, so I loved that team for years and years and years, and I've never seen another team do it.
Yep.
And now I'm old enough to where it's like, you know, my emotional connection and sentiment will always be tied to 1986.
100%.
But to Howie's point, like, if you're under 40, 86 means nothing to you. And these guys, and I've talked to them myself, they say the same thing. Not that they're not proud of what they accomplished, or they don't. It's just like, enough already. It's been 40 years of talking about the same thing. Can somebody else win it?
You could be selfish, though, because think about monetizing that. You're the last Met to win a championship. I mean, I believe that
Roddy
wants. Yeah. I know Roddy wants to win, and Keith, I get it. Yeah. But, like, I don't know. If you're on the 86 Mets team, I mean, do you definitely want these Mets to win? Yeah. You probably do, but it is cool being the last champion, too, I guess.
BT and Sal on the Fan will come back. We'll have more of your calls. We'll have Susan Waldman coming up at 12:25 as well. So about an hour from now, we'll have Susan and do some Yankees. BT and Sal on the Fan. Right. BT and Sal back on the Fan. We'll get back to your Mets calls, 888-808-1019. But the Yankees do have a big game today as well. This is a great day, BT, New York sports. Again, we have both the Mets and Yankees playing baseball playoff games. You get the Mets, of course, at home, game 4, 5 o'clock. Yankees on the road in Kansas City. Huge game 3. That one, what is it, 7:08 first pitch?
7:08, yep.
So 2 hours after the Mets first pitch, you get the Yankees here. And it's going to be a big, we talked about the Mets stars producing right now. The Yankee stars got to step up, specifically Aaron Judge.
You know, Aaron Judge, and somebody like Aaron Judge, any great player who's going through it, and he's wearing it for sure. He just looks jumpy and he looks out of whack here. To me, anytime a great player goes through a prolonged stretch of, I'll just use the word ineptitude to keep it moving, but certainly a radical drop from what we're used to, I look for a couple of things. Like with Pete, when Pete was going through what he was going through, he was jumpy and he was loose with his mechanics. And while I would generally have confidence that Aaron Judge tonight or the next game or eventually is going to run into a 3-run missile because he's Aaron Judge, he looks like he looked in April. And he is missing balls by 2 feet. He has expanded his zone. He is, I'm going to use the word jumpy again. Like when Aaron Judge is locked in, he's spitting on that first curveball or sinker or slider in the dirt. He's swinging at it. Like, he is so aware of his October failures, for lack of a better word, that I think he's pressing. And he's pressing to the point now where I'm not saying that I don't expect the Yankees to win tonight, but I don't really expect Aaron Judge to be in the middle of it right now.
Which is crazy. Although tonight is now look, there are no excuses. It's the postseason. It's the DS. It's not even the championship series or the World Series yet. But they are facing Seth Lugo, one of the best pitchers in baseball. I mean, can you really knock Judge if he goes 0-for tonight against Lugo? Reagan's is one thing.
Yeah.
You know, Waka, I know Waka's had his number, but still, it's Michael Waka. Like, come on, bro. You're Aaron Judge. At some point, you got to get hit. And the Royals bullpen. But Lugo tonight, you would think that of the three is going to be the most difficult matchup.
Yeah, which is why I wouldn't play Stanton. Because, I mean, runs are going to be at a premium. Number one, you know, runs have been at a premium too often this year with the Yankees if they don't get the long ball. And I can't have Stanton just, you know, clog up the bases like he's done multiple times every single game. So myself, I would play Dominguez tonight. Yeah. I would play him. I'm going to keep running Verdugo out there. You know, I don't want to be so bottom line. Like tomorrow, if Aaron Judge takes the collar and he's 0-for-4 and he lines out the center and he hits like a one-hop rocket to the second baseman, strikes out and pops out, like, I'm not thrilled, but at least there's signs that he's beginning to square up the baseball, which means his mechanics and everything are starting to come back to where they need to be. That's one thing, because Lugo is good. But, you know, if you strike out again, you know, especially early when you have guys on base, you set the tone, he's going to get crushed, and rightfully so.
Well, it's not even like he came out with nobody on in his first at-bat and struck out. He's come up twice, two games in a row, with a chance to change the game right out of the gate.
Yep.
And he's come up short. In both instances, the Yankees failed because of it.
And you see what I see. Again, like, there's guys who might be in a little bit of a stretch where they're cold, but the swings are still pretty good. Like Austin Wells early in the year. Remember I said Austin Wells was actually, some of his advanced numbers were pretty favorable. The average wasn't there, but he was hitting some bad luck, and he's proven to be a pretty comp. I love Wells. You know that.
Yeah.
Right now, I'm seeing Judge, and I have to say this again. Judge looks like he looked in April. He looked like he hasn't played for a month. I know he didn't play for a week. Nobody did if you're a Yankee, but he looks incredibly rusty. He looks incredibly unsure of himself. He is all out of whack, and he's going to have to reconnect, and he's going to have to do it fast because I don't want to waste anybody's time on legacy now. We're in the middle of a series, which I think the Yankees will still find a way to win. But if Judge doesn't join the party, it is unacceptable. He's not 25. He's 32. He is in the firm apex of his career. He's got
to
hit.
You expect the Yankees to have a game five or no?
I do. I think they're going to split in Kansas City, come back, and, you know, then it's Rodon at that point, which would terrify me. And I've been supporting Rodon, but what I saw the other night would have me very rattled going into game five with him.
Yeah, I don't know.
To the point where I might bypass him and give the ball to Luis Gil.
Rodon, come on, he's terrible. Yeah, and if he can't succeed in that spot where the crowd was, the way I would describe it as I was in the building for it, a ferocious roar. Wasn't just loud. It was ferocious. When he struck out the side and then gets out of trouble in the third, I think it was, or had a moment there in the third.
Got out of trouble.
Yeah, and then you're thinking, okay, even me, I'm like, oh, maybe this is the night. I still don't trust him, but maybe this is the night. And then, boom, fourth inning.
I know.
He gives it all up. If he can't succeed there, where's he going to succeed? Do you think, couple more things on this, do you think that them getting away from home, and it plays into you saying that you think it's going to be a game five, where if it does come back to a game five, I mean, it's going to be immense pressure on this group. Do you think being on the road will help them a little bit?
I think the easy answer is yes, because it's a different energy.
They've had a better record on the road than home, don't
they? Oh, yeah, they really scuffled at home. Which is very much the aberration. There was a point where they just could not win in the Bronx at all. It was actually prolonged. It was alarming. But it's also an anomaly. Like, the Yankees always play well at home outside of this year. I would think that maybe you get away from the 49,000 lunatics who are cheering for you, and you kind of get that extra energy, you know, pulsating through your body, and maybe you're a little bit too amped up. I think that will be gone tonight, but now you're facing their best pitcher. So you might be more relaxed, and you still might get four or five hits and have a rough night. Lugo's good.
And I got to be honest with you. I don't know if it's, like, I know what this Yankee team was all year, but there's something about the Yankees in the postseason, and maybe more specifically the Yankees in the postseason against the AL Central. I'll admit, like, I didn't think the Royals were very good. I still don't think the Royals are very good, but they should be up 2-0 in this series. And by the way, Bobby Witt Jr. hasn't done crap either.
Nothing.
Mr. MVP. I mean, can he get a hit? I mean, so it's not just Judge. It's also Bobby Witt Jr. Imagine if he had his impact felt. They should be up 2-0. But I'll admit that when it comes to the Yankees, even though I knew that this team, I've been saying it all year, I don't believe they're good or World Series caliber. Maybe I'm brainwashed from what I saw in the 90s. I just feel like I bet them to sweep this series. I thought they were going to sweep this series against the Royals.
Tell me that. Yeah.
And I still don't feel like they're going to, like, are they really going to lose in the first round to the Royals? Based on how they're playing, it is logical to think that is a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe I'm just brainwashed by the Yankees in the postseason historically feeling like there's no way they're going to lose in the first round to a division to a AL Central team.
Well, I don't feel as confident. You know, and think about what we just said about Howie Rose and with Howie, like that the staleness of, even though it's amazing and it's, you know, it's the origin for many of our sporting memories in the formative stage, the championships, the Mets in 86, the St. John's Final Four, whatever, things we referenced before. I don't want to hear about the 90s anymore. I appreciated them. I was there for a lot of those wins. It was amazing. I went to two parades. It was great. I was there in 09 game two when Pedro pitched against A.J. Burnett. Great game. But I'm done with that. Like, I am disconnected and divorced from the 90s because this team hasn't played like that in forever. The blind faith is gone. I do think the Yankees win the series. I don't know if they win because of Judge. I still feel good. Volpe's had some good at-bats lately, starting to run on the bases a bit. I still think Jazz, you know, maybe the home run gets him going the other night. I don't like what he said post-game. Right. I thought that was very weak when he said the Royals got lucky. But I think Wells is swinging the stick all right. I think the Yankees squeezed by Kansas City, but I don't want to hear about the 90s. A long time since the 90s.
Steven is calling from Harlem. What's up, Steven?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Hey, Steve.
You know, I was hoping to call in today to talk some Rodon finally, but You know, that didn't go the way I expected. So I'll give you props where it's due, Sal. He hasn't earned that contract. But I'll say this, postseason's not over. I don't think they're coming back to New York to play Kansas City. I think they're coming back to New York to play whoever wins between the Guardians and Tigers. We played really well in Kansas City during the regular season. I know it's the regular season, but sometimes you see the Yanks go into different ballparks and they can kind of relax into their strokes a little more.
Yeah.
It sounds a little silly, but the outfield in Yankee Stadium is so tight that there's certain balls that just, you know, don't drop that look like they're going into gaps and stuff like that. I think Judge is going to have two doubles today. His last couple of at-bats after the first one of the game two was a lot better. I mean, I don't see him coming up and hitting a home run, but I think he's towards the end of April, not beginning of April, like BC, where he started to hit some doubles and come into himself, mm-hmm. and then he started to see the power really come. So,
by the way, you are right. The doubles did come before the home runs, and thanks for the call. I mean, by the way, both teams have to deal with the outfield dimensions. So,
yeah.
You know, line drives not dropping for the Yankees. Well, guess what? You can make the case they're not dropping for the Royals either.
Yeah.
So,
Gleyber Torres pop up and right wouldn't have been a home run, but Yankee Stadium, like, come on.
Yeah, and you think about Witt's first at bat against Garrett Cole. I mean, he hasn't had any hits, but he absolutely lasered that one to dead center another foot or two could have easily been gone, or 2 feet either way, left center or right center. That's a two bag or maybe a three because he might be the fastest player in baseball. The Yankees are just weird to read, man.
Yeah, they
just have been, Sal.
I still expect Judge to go nuts.
I don't.
Even if it's against... I know.
Eventually. But I don't know if I expect him to go nuts this series.
Yeah. I mean, if he doesn't, there might not be another series.
Well, that's why Soto's got to carry the mail. And, you know, Volpe and Wells and the players I mentioned. Grisham. I mean, come on.
I thought
Birdie swung the bat well the other night.
Yeah, he played
well. I'd play him again at first base.
Again, we're going to rely on Birdie being an integral part.
Yeah. No, not relying on him.
But think about what we're talking about here. You're right. And maybe you trust him more than others. I don't believe in Gleyber Torres. I still believe Torres will cost the Yankees in a big spot. And by the way, he comes up in a big spot. Like, you've got to get that game to Juan Soto. You've got to get that game to Juan Soto. You can't end it with Soto being on deck. No way. Figure out a way. Lindor would have gotten on and passed the baton. That's what he does. That's why the Mets have had those dramatics. There's only one thing Gleyber Torres needed to do in game two. Get the game in Soto's hands, win or lose, and he couldn't do it. So I don't trust Gleyber. Stand on the base pass. I'm with you. He's unplayable. He's unplayable.
I can't run him out there anymore.
Whatever potential offense, and he's been like this for years anyway, but they just keep running. We talked about this in the offseason. We don't want Stanton back. It's one of the reasons why I said that the Mets had a better offseason than the Yankees, because Stanton should have been off this team.
Yep.
And you're seeing it again. So there are certain things I don't believe in with this Yankee team, but Judge is not one of them. I believe Judge is going to get it. Like, I don't believe in or not. Judge, I believe, is going to turn it on. I would be surprised, even if just Soto and Judge alone weren't enough to get them through this series with Kansas City.
A lot of ways Yanks should be down 0-2. You said it. They got lucky on that call with Grisham.
Yep.
He was out. And, you know, this is maybe, hopefully not, but it would be a deeper conversation in a couple of days. If the Yankees don't win this series, Boone is gone and Judge is going to get crushed.
BT and Sal on the Fan. We'll come back with your calls, 888-808-1019.
A good question.
Three random questions.
Let's find out.
With Brendan Tierney and Sal Licata.
One, two, three.
On the Fan.
All right, BT, here we go. A little 3RQ for you on this Wednesday, as always. Number one, what's your go-to ballpark meal?
You know, honestly, I don't eat a whole lot at these ballparks. I really don't. Like, when I go to them, first of all, it takes, well, I mean, obviously Uber Eats comes to the seats, and there's other ways, like, you know, Swede, you get to eat.
I would say never.
I mean, usually it's pretty conventional. Like, I don't get too nutty. Like, you see some of this stuff, like a hot dog with, like, I don't know, peanut butter or, like,
right.
Some of these creations are odd and weird. I'm conventional. I think I've got a pretty interesting palate when it comes to general food. Like, I'm pretty eclectic.
Right.
I love seafood and sushi and Italian and all that stuff. But at the yard, yeah, give me a beer or two, give me a dog, give me a burger, give me cheese fries. That's it. How about you?
I'd probably go chicken tendies and fries.
All right.
That's what I had last night. And I didn't even want to eat badly, but yeah, I guess, a little hungry. If there's one thing that I'm going to eat at a ballpark, it's going to be that. Chicken tendies and the Nathan crinkle cut fries.
With cheese on them? I love Nathan.
I don't do the cheese.
Really?
Usually ketchup, but these were even good plain. I didn't go mess with the ketchup.
I love Nathan's. Nathan's, I love everything about Nathan's.
Yeah, I'm all right. It's,
Nathan's is money.
You look like you're going to hit that up this weekend.
I'm getting hungry saying this. Nathan's is great.
Can we get it in here tomorrow, as a matter of fact? That would be great. All right, number two, would you rather get invited to something and have the pressure of making a decision to say yes or no, or just not get invited at all?
Oh, that's an interesting one. Is it a formal event? I mean, it could be anything. Whatever, a party, BT, a golf outing.
Hey, BT, you want to come over and watch the game this weekend? You want to go to the game? Whatever it may be. You know what it's like. An invite comes pressure of...
It does, to respond properly or respond in a timely manner at least. And if you do, you got to bring some stuff, and there's that added responsibility.
You have to go and Even though in theory, hypothetically, let's say, hey, BT, you want to come over and watch the game. In theory, it sounds great.
I know what you mean.
You'd love to come over and hang out and do it, but
I know what you mean. When we're on the air, it sounds great. Hey, I'd literally love to do this with Sal. And then you get sucked up with life and the kids, and it's like, oh, I can't do it. I'm going to give you the most honest answer. If it's one of my friends and it's something to do with people that I knew first, I want to get the invite. If it's one of my wife's friends, I don't want to get the invite. I don't want to have to deal with it. Not that I don't love friends. I don't mean that. But it's just a different... It's because there's a better chance I'm not interested in going.
Even the boomer thing. Now, I didn't come up with this question because of that, but even the boomer thing. He didn't invite you to the...
He didn't invite you either.
Boys. He's giving you shirts. He gives you Jets helmets all the time.
I thought we were boys.
He invited you to the bike tour thing, so you did that. He didn't invite you to the golf. You'd rather... So in that particular case, you would have rather have been invited and just said no.
Well, he could have given me the token invite because there's no way I'm taking off that day. Now, if it's May or... Well, it depends if the Knicks fight, but July or August, fairly benign Monday or whatever. That's different. We have a fair amount of vacation, nothing going on. We don't take off during the fall. He could have thrown me the bone knowing that I'm not going to take it, and he extended the invite. He did the right thing, but he elected not to.
It was an easy path for him just to invite you knowing that you weren't going to come.
Correct.
All right, last one for you. What's your favorite season of The Sopranos? We went over the characters.
Oh, my favorite because
I'm in,
season.
Yeah, I'm in the midst of watching. I don't know if I could pick, even if you just give me some order of top three. The reason why I bring this up is I just finished season 4, and it was so dark.
Yeah.
I don't know if I remember that when I first watched it, but now as an adult.
Give me one of the quickest storylines, because this came up a month or so ago, and I was rewatching, and I was still in season. I haven't touched it since we spoke, ironically.
Season 4 is Piomai. They kill Ralphie. Christopher's the drugs.
When they have the intervention at home with Paulie Walnuts,
it's still a great show and a great season. But it's just dark, whereas 1, 2, and 3, while there were dark moments...
The kids were younger, it's a little more pure certain things.
AJ gets himself into trouble. The Bobby Bacala's wife passes away. Tony and Carmella divorce.
That was dark.
It just goes in a dark...
I got to tell you, and it's probably a dark answer. I don't love darkness. I'm more of a light kind of a guy. But when... I'm trying to connect the dots. Did Adriana get the club in season 4?
I think three.
I was in 3, you're right. Yeah. But 4 was obviously more scenes there, and Chris was deep into his stuff. To me, Chris Moltisanti, and you asked me the other day, he's my favorite, him and Paulie, and I think he's that of me. I even said Johnny Sack is a wild card one. When Chris has his issues, he's such an unpredictable wild card. It's dark, but I think it made the storyline so much better. So I would say I really did like 4, even with the darkness. Yeah. I love them all, by the way.
Yeah, I know. It's the same thing. I'm watching it going, this is so great. It's still a great show, but I don't love it the way I loved 1, 2, and 3. Tony takes a turn where you see him really dark. Mm-hmm. I don't like Chrissy getting caught up in the heroin.
Yeah.
Paulie and Johnny Sack start talking. Ralphie is just such a pain in the neck.
Oh, Ralphie's character was good, though.
Yeah, I know. Ralphie brought a lot to the table. Then eventually you got it.
Tony was the one who pumped those right into his chest. Remember that?
Yeah, no, I remember.
At the old house or the old, Tony, where the upstate?
No, Tony, how did he kill him? Strangled himself.
Oh, in the kitchen. That's right. In the kitchen. That's right. He got him in the kitchen.
And then Chrissy had to come over, and he was high. He goes to chop his head off, and he pulls the wig off.
It was on the kitchen floor, like the old linoleum where they try to get the blood up. Oh, my God. That's crazy
stuff. But it was just dark. All right. There you have it. We'll come back, reset you the crowd topic of the day.
Continue eating lunch, everybody.
Yeah. We'll do both Mets and Yanks, and we're getting a little Jets as well. And your calls at 888-808-1019. It's better over
here. AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port and trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.